Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back again. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, as well as 1798Part2.org, as well as RepublicReview.org, excuse me. And so, as you know, this is the only show on air, and this is the only show on air, whether that be radio, TV, or what have you, that will provide you with the constitutional solution and getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. If you cannot listen to today's entire show, then you can listen to the rebroadcast on Thursday, tomorrow, at 5 p.m., Saturday at 11 a.m., and Sunday at 9 p.m. So with that, I got a lot to go through, and I want to make sure, because tomorrow's Thanksgiving, and everybody is probably familiar with my spin on Thanksgiving, and I'm hoping some of you have already taken the approach of changing your paradigm, or at least broadening what you do for Thanksgiving. And so let me get into some details, though, with the Republican Coffee Club, Rob Chase's Republican Coffee Club. There will be no meeting this week. Next week, it'll be Dr. Jason Kinley, who is a neuropath, and he provides natural medicine to cure what ails you. December 7th will be Representative Mary Dye completing the Columbia Basin Project. And so with that, as you know, next week it'll go back to regular schedule, 7 a.m. at Something Else Deli at 152 South Sherman. Northwest Grassroots, I am hoping that they do a Bill of Rights. They usually do a Bill of Rights presentation because December 15th is Bill of Rights Day. So I'm hoping to be able to announce that next week in my final show. But if not, please make sure you go to YouTube and subscribe to the Northwest Grassroots YouTube channel. My trip to Wyoming, I kind of briefly mentioned that. I can only tell you, because it's important that we kind of get things developed and matured in the next couple of weeks, or actually a couple of months, but we definitely exceeded expectations in this trip as far as connecting and being able to do what we were hoping to do. As a matter of fact, we're doing far more. Coming back, we're definitely got more engaged and more going on, and I would love to tell you, but I hope you forgive me, but it is really important that we just kind of keep this on the low key, other than the fact that I think everybody in this state and in all the real red states, they can start looking towards, in the red state areas or red counties, you can start looking towards Wyoming as a real leader. They are ready and ripe to lead. One other thing I wanted to point out is it looks like Leonard Christian lost his race. I'm not sure if you understand the implications, but he was seated about a year ago on the board of equity by his two pals, Mary Cooney and Al French. And that was done improperly, or at least improperly, but possibly even illegally seated, because there's not going to be anybody on the airwaves demanding a full independent investigation of what happened. Because as far as I'm concerned, both French and Cooney should resign. And anybody that backed them and knew, because this became public well before the election, and anybody backing them, they should, shame on them. Shame on any politician or anybody that was backing somebody that would do something underhanded like that. And really, excuse the expression, but screw over the good citizens of Spokane County and not giving everybody an opportunity to apply when they just wanted to seat him on the board to help give him credibility for his election coming up, because they knew he wanted to pursue a seat. But it looks like he didn't squeak it out. So anyway, I can go on and on about how Spokane needs an independent voice. And I can tell you that if you're counting on looking to Spokes and Tokes or Spokesman Review or whatever you want to call it, or the Inlander, There is really no credibility coming out of those organizations. I mean, I forget. I was reading an article and they were talking about a gentleman who was actually on the Lisa Brown campaign, and he was supposedly their source for whether something was conservative and or, you know, aligned with conservative print, like somebody on the Lisa Brown campaign would even know that. These people are so steeped in their biases that they are only grinding agendas. And as far as I'm concerned, they're propaganda machines. And if you have seen my meme on Facebook, go to Mobius Strip Press on Facebook. And I have a meme regarding this. Just so you know, there is no such thing as the freedom of the press guaranteed by state government. That is only guaranteed by the federal government. States could actually set standards and actually start silencing these propaganda machines. And if you want to look at the facts on that, by all means, and then ping me back if I'm not available. You can always get me via Facebook. Or you can send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. So as we reach the point, and we're literally reaching that point in the season, as we start coming together as families and communities, giving thanks, I believe now is time. And I know I've done this before. I've done this twice before. So this is my third time. But I think this is very important to share a historical perspective so that we can possibly, again, broaden our paradigm and actually start doing what the framers thought was important. Because I believe it is imperative to start with the original reason for Thanksgiving. When I say original reason, I mean the original reason for our newly formed Constitutional Republic. In 1789, that would be that newly formed Constitutional Republic. Not 2 years before that or 5 years after that, 60 years after that. No, the framers were definitely attuned with as they were going through the Bill of Rights, as they were literally putting together this divine republic. They were definitely attuned with, I believe, the divine hand of providence. And so with all of that, let me kind of just leap into the historical perspective. As we know, in 1621, the Pilgrims came to the New World, and they've basically tried that old and failed ideology called socialism. Here's an irony, though. There were other attempts here in the Americas before that that tried that exact same failed paradigm, socialism. And each time it's been a tragedy. In 1607, Jamestown, it was a tragedy. Do you see the Virginians having some Virginian tradition of Thanksgiving? No, they were just thankful to be able to get out of that and actually start, you know, living for themselves. But anyway, this ideology, socialism, was in stark contrast to the profit-driven capitalist. And they weren't really capitalist in England, because you got to understand that was a mercantile system. It's not like you could just create your own business. England, the crown, told you what you could grow, and they told you where to grow it, if you know what I mean. So as the Pilgrims landed, they set up their home late in the season. Everybody knows this. And Governor Bradford instituted their plan of socialism. And so as we kind of pull forward just a couple of years, we realize that, you know, this socialism isn't working out as well as everyone expected. And as a matter of fact, they started coming to the realization that expecting everyone to pull their weight was pure folly. I think it was like one out of five that was really pulling their weight. And a new term came out of this era there in Massachusetts called Tragedy of the Commons, when people would go in the middle of the night and steal from everybody else out of the commons where everything was being grown, harvest what they could, and they'd run back home. And then next thing you know, all the food was gone when people went to go harvest what little was there. So in 1623, Bradford abolished socialism. He gave each household a parcel of land and told them that they could keep what they produced or trade it away as they saw fit. In other words, he replaced socialism with basically a free market, and that was the end of their famines. Now, there was a volcanic winter that they had to face a lot later, but that wasn't because of some stupidity on their own, if you understand what I'm saying. Anyway, many earlier groups of colonists set up these types of states, and as I mentioned, Jamestown was one, and less than half of those people in Jamestown survived. And if you understand, their first 12 months, they had a real hard time. This was because most of the work, again, was only done by a portion of the people, and there were plenty of leeches that were in there sucking away their goods and their hard work. The empirical data has always proven that socialism is a failed ideology. And so only when we are held to some standard that we must produce for ourselves, we are truly tapping the potential of an individual and or the individual family. Nothing destroys individual worth faster than handouts, entitlement, or communal living. Even the hippies had to learn this for themselves. I happen to be one that grew up in that time frame. So now let me go ahead and jump, and we're jumping into 1789, shortly after they started forming this new Constitutional Republic, and they were over there working in Congress very hard. Madison was working and arguing back and forth with Sherman over the Bill of Rights. And so what ended up happening was I'm going to run out of time, so I'm not even going to give you any more. You'll have to stay tuned, and when we come back, I'm going to tell you exactly what they ended up doing and are sending to President Washington at the time. So, again, please stay tuned, and I will be right back after this. Thank you so much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so I am back, and as we rapidly went into that break, I was about to tell you that if you look at what happened in 1789, they were literally just forming, and they were literally just aligning this new Republican form of government. And some of the things were happening was Jefferson wasn't there yet. He had to show up a little bit later because he was coming back from France, his emissary duties. And he was actually coming into a Secretary of State position that Alexander Hamilton kind of got his fingers into the mix and made sure that Alexander Hamilton and the Department of Treasury had a little more responsibility than it was supposed to or should have had. But anywho, and that already set the stage for these two brilliant men, and one with integrity and the other one with moral turpitude, which was Alexander Hamilton, of course. But anyway, I'm just trying to set the stage. So, you know, the full government was not even really, coalesced completely. They were still trying to get North Carolina, I think, was just ratifying literally in November timeframe of 1789. So they weren't at the table yet. Then South Carolina and I believe Rhode Island hadn't come on board yet. But they were already working on the Bill of Rights. Madison and Sherman were arguing where to put them and all sorts of manner of things that were very important. They also rubber stamped the Northwest Ordinance. I believe that was either August 22nd or August 8th, but I know it was in August, shortly after they formed. It was one of the first things that they said, okay, here's the old business. We are definitely going to, approve this and make sure that the Northwest Ordinance, and you have to understand the importance of that. The Northwest Ordinance was supposed to end slavery. It was supposed to keep it and contain it in the few states that it had. And in doing so, they basically made it so that the southern states, because remember, North and South Carolina weren't there yet. And so they made sure that the southern states would be contained. And later on, the southern states, with evil machinations and designs, were able to get this stupid thing called the Missouri Compromise. But see, that's what happens when you start talking history. You can start going down all these different paths. And so forgive me, because the focus is on Thanksgiving. And I'm just trying to set the stage that they had a lot of work to do. However, it was very important for Congress to recognize the fact that they were the beneficiaries of the grand, and I should say, the divine hand of providence. And so what they did was they sent a unanimous, and I mean unanimous, call from both houses to President Washington to declare a proclamation, a national Thanksgiving. And that's what it was titled, Proclamation, a National Thanksgiving. And let me see here. What was the exact date done by him? It was the third day of October. Now, just keep in mind that they didn't even start their session in 1789 until like May, or I think it was the end of May, because that's when Madison really started working on, I think it was the very end of May and early June when he started working on the Bill of Rights. So just trying to put this into context for those of you that, take offense to the fact that, this really was the very first proclamation for Thanksgiving in the new Constitutional Republic. And so it is very important. They tried to set the tone. However, these men were not men of folly and indolence. They weren't fans of being honored. They didn't want their faces on money. They didn't want monuments. They were just men. They wanted to be remembered as just men, not gods. And so what they wanted to do was they wanted to set the tone in this very first proclamation of what the people of this new republic should be centered on and how they should be focused. So let me kind of jump into this, because time is going to fly by and I'll probably go into a next segment of this. Anyway, this is what Washington said. Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, and to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. And whereas both houses of Congress have, by their joint committee, requested me to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their own safety and happiness. Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November, next to be devoted by the people of the states to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all that is good and that was, that is, or will be. Now, I want to stop here. He didn't say anything about eating. He didn't say anything about remembering the pilgrims or failed socialism. He didn't say anything other than to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being, with a capital B, who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be. I want to make this very clear. What they set the tone was, and if you understand the principles of Christianity, I think you do, that charity and service are critical. And as a matter of fact, those are, you know, that is exactly what Christ did. And he wants us to do those same things. And so these men understood this, and that is why they tried to set that tone. So I carry on as what George Washington said, and he said, continuing, that we may then all unite in rendering unto him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies and the favorable interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war, for the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been enabled to establish constitutions of government for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one, he's talking about the national constitution, now lately instituted for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have acquiring of diffusing useful knowledge, and in general, for all the great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us. He goes on and says, I think I've got time to finish this. And also that we may then unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and ruler of nations, and beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually, to render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed, to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as have shown kindness to us, and to bless them with good governments, peace, and concord, to promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue, and the increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as he alone knows to be best, given under my hand at the city of New York the third day of October. And yes, they were in New York for their first couple of sessions before they went down to Philadelphia, before they went to Washington, D.C. And as a matter of fact, I believe it was in 1792 in Philadelphia when James Madison hosted Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton, where both of them came to an agreement, and Madison made probably the biggest mistake in his life. He agreed to not fight the Assumption Act and allow the Assumption Act to move forward, where the federal governments could start creating banks, which he felt and he knew was unconstitutional. But, and let's see, I'm going down this history path. But what that did was it gave Washington, D.C. the seat of government that where it was, because it was going to be in Philadelphia. And because there was all of this land right there where Washington, D.C. was, it was undeveloped, very close to George Washington, close to, close to Jefferson as well as Madison. And Jefferson saw a great opportunity to be able to buy some land speculations in that great area prior to it being decided so that it might be worth something. Anyway, it's another one of those unfortunate moments of, if you want to call it greed or what have you, but I know Jefferson was trying to make money because he was sorely in debt. And most people, if you didn't know, the day he died is the day they foreclosed on his debt because they knew he was no longer able to pay his debt. So they literally came in and took all of his goods and so forth as they were trying to take care of the deceased Thomas Jefferson's body before they even buried it. So anywho, with that, now you understand, and I'll try to summarize the importance of what we should be doing here and how, you know, my suggestion for you as a family, as an individual, for what it's worth. And we'll get into some other really important stuff in Spokane. And I will be right back after this. Thank you so much.
Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VONTRACYDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Okay, so I am back, and I think the salient point I want to make is the fact that these men were wise enough and understood the importance of putting aside one's self-interest. I have said this many a times, that the reason that they were so successful in creating the greatest republic that embraced the fullest amount of liberty ever realized on the face of the earth was because they put aside their differences. And you got to understand that their differences were pretty stark. And what I mean by that is they had religious differences. They had labor differences. Those in the South believed in labor or slavery. Those in the North had already started abolishing slavery. And if you've listened to and or read the ratification debates, North Carolina pointed out that most of the states in the North had already abolished slavery and they were looking at them as a problem. So, if you start understanding how important serving one another really is, and that fundamental Christian principle, then you can understand why they wanted to set the tone in that manner. Now, there's a great history of different Thanksgivings and so forth, but none more poignant in a message than this. Because setting aside a day of thanks to him and giving service for him to others is truly
where this nation needs to be. And so let me be clear. Each of the presidents for decades called for national prayer and fasting and humility periods. Madison did this and so forth and so on to Abraham Lincoln. Now, I want to put this into context. In 1848, the Communist Manifesto was published. That was the beginning of collectivism being a pushed ideology in the public. Now, the framers were fully aware of the failed concepts of ideology historically. And they saw, the framers saw that this was coming forth. They even addressed it. But I am telling you that Lincoln maybe not wasn't the brightest bulb on the tree. He wasn't an idiot, and he wasn't necessarily obtuse, but he had some issues. Here's a guy that failed, 18 times, went into the army as a captain and was kicked out as a private. Here was a man that was so beaten by failure that by the time he became president, he was bound and determined not to fail again. And so the reason we are celebrating Thanksgiving the way we are today is because of him. And he believed in collectivism. He believed that the union had to stay together, and he opened the door towards a lot of unconstitutional tyranny as well as unconstitutional government. The incorporation doctrine came from his period of time, and that was all unconstitutional. We're living under a huge blanket of federal tyranny, as you've probably heard me talk about here. And so there's a way to clean this up. It's not that dirty of a mess. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be moved and gotten rid of, but it's not that hard. And those who have the constitutional authority, all they've got to do is do their job. It's not my job to do. It's not the president's job to do. It's not even Congress's job to do. All they're going to do is continue to pile on more and more unconstitutional government. But bottom line, I believe that it's a tragedy that they do not teach this reverence to this nation towards our Creator in the school system. In other words, I think that we, you know, there's a reason why they don't teach this message. And it's because they do not want you to understand how Christian this nation really was. They do not want you to see the real facts of the mind model and the paradigm that the framers really possessed. I mean, when did they sign the Constitution? Just look at the back. It's the very last part of the Constitution. They did it in the year of their Lord. They didn't do it, you know, on a very specific date of current era, as the Wiccans would have you want to believe. And so most people don't know, and I've said this lots of times, they just don't know how much of this nation truly was a Christian republic. And when I mean nation, I literally mean states. The states were nations, and the republic was literally a coagulation and or an amalgamation of different nations that created a general government and delegated very specific powers. That general government was a nation in itself, but it was a limited nation, not like the states. If you want, you can go through the Federalist Papers and the ratification debates. It all clearly states that it was a nation outward facing, but it had no domestic powers whatsoever. So this is why in my book I provide examples of this fact and how we've really obscured our progressive education system, or I should say the facts have been obscured by our progressive education system. I'm sure that these three examples I'm going to give you are probably none that you're aware of, but before Jefferson left to Europe, he was tried for abandoning his post as governor because it was a war post. And if you understand what happened, the day he was supposed to actually transition the seat of the governor seat to another, to his successor, I believe it was Benedict Arnold that rode forces through Monticello and ran him into the woods, so he wasn't there. Anyway, a traveling judge came down to do a hearing, and As they put everybody in the room, the traveling judge called Jefferson and the rest of the officers of the court forward. He says, "Mr. Jefferson, I am aware of the fact that you are," and I'm paraphrasing, "I'm aware of the fact that you are not a Christian in good standing in your community. And because of that, I will not allow you to testify in my court. However, because you are an officer, I will allow you to ask questions and cross-examine, but no testimony." And he wanted to make sure Jefferson understood that. Another example of this Christian faith that was rampant, Alexis de Tocqueville in 1833 made note, and he said he saw this several times, but he made note of a very specific case in New York. This is in New York, not Virginia. That happened in Virginia with Jefferson. In New York, there was a case that was thrown out by the judge because the plaintiff was atheist. And the judge clearly stated that, we cannot have atheists. We can't trust atheists in our court system. You had to be a Christian in good standing in your community. In Joseph Story's, here's their third example, in Joseph Story's biography, he clearly stated that they did not allow any credit for infidels. They called infidels non-believer Christians that weren't in good standing. And so with that, if you start understanding this context, you know, you may not have seen any worshiping coming from the federal government, but when it came to the court system, your credibility, if you were going to bear testimony, you had to be a Christian in good standing. So does that make us a Christian republic? Especially when you look at every state in the union happen to have a state-sponsored church. And if you read my book, I tell you exactly which of them, what state had what church, and how long those churches existed. I think the final church out of the 13 colonies was finally retired in 1877 and went towards a non-denominational approach. Back in those days, they used the term secular, but today secular means godless. Back then, it was really non-denominational because they were Christian-leaning and they were Christian-believing and faithful people. It's just that they didn't, at a government level, they didn't subscribe to a very particular faith, if you understand what I'm saying. And so I just want you to understand that there is more than enough evidence that proves the fact that this and each of the states were Christian. So if you put all of the states together, then one has to basically put it together that the sum of the parts made the whole Christian, period. Now, does that mean anything? Yes, it does if you want to accurately, you know, depict our history. If you want to, you know, gloss over those things and get people to believe otherwise, then what you are doing is you're obfuscating the truth. So with what little time I have left, I kind of wanted to get into the fact that, you know, if you start looking at the local politics and what's going on, I kind of want to spend this week and next week in trying to, you know, give you some last parting information, pieces, and advice, because to me, I still would love to see Spokane take its heritage back and go back to the principles and values that made it great and makes this nation, this republic, great. And those are the, you know, the subscription of individual liberty and individual sovereignty instead of being conscribed or enslaved to enslavement or subjugation. Now, the Spokesman Review, or the, like I call them, the Spokes and Tokes Review, as far as in my eye, they are culpable in releasing certain information regarding conservatives and suppressing information regarding establishment and progressives who support the progressive agenda. That is why they have zero credibility. Inlander does the exact same thing. And so, if you, like I said, go to Facebook and read my post. I've got a meme out there that actually talks about the fact that the freedom of the press does not apply to states. States could actually start holding the press accountable and making sure that they're objective journalists and not just
axe grinders and or monkeys dancing to some organ grinder, whoever is paying and dictating what the agenda will be. I will be right back, and I'm going to give you a citation from Mr. Rockefeller, and I think you're going to find it insightful and illuminating. So we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much.
It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, so as you know, I am going to give you a little spoon feeding, and this happens to be David Rockefeller's words himself. This happens to come out of his book, Memoirs. And this is where he admits to conspiring to a new world order. I'm not saying this. This is what he is saying. So anybody that wants to say, oh, you know, GR has gone down that fringe leap of, you know, conspiracy theories. I'm not. What I'm going to give you here are David Rockefeller's words out of his memoirs. And so in David Rockefeller's book, Memoirs, he admits he is a part of a secret cabal working to destroy the United States and create a new world order. And here is the direct quote from his book, page 405. Some even believe we, and what he's referring to is the Rockefeller family, are part of a secret cabal working against the best interest of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring the others around the world, or I'm sorry, conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure. One world, if you will, if that's the that's the charge. I stand guilty and am proud of it. He goes on a little bit further and says, we are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. And this is in 1992, my friends. And he says, for almost 40 years, they've used this discretion. It would, and back to quoting, it would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. But the work is now much more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government. the supernatural sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national auto-determination practiced in the past centuries. And again, that speech right there was to the Trilateral Commission in 1991. And this next one is his words, and he says, "If a nation values anything more than freedom, then it will lose its freedom. And the irony of it is that it is the comfort and security that it values. It will lose to that too. Unknown Americans must decide. Are we to be governed by Americans or by international organizations? I, for one, owe no allegiance to the United Nations, nor will I give it to any. I obey only the U.S. Constitution. You had better think about the issue, for the UN can violate the sovereignty of Haiti, Iraq, and others." And this is actually Charlie Reese. This is not him in the Orlando Sentinel. And this is what he keeps on going and saying, forgive me. He keeps on going and says, "You had better think about the issue of the UN can violate the sovereignty of Haiti, Iraq, and other countries. It can violate ours. The United States may not be the top dog in 15 years from now. And the UN Security Council resolutions backed by, say, China soldiers could be aimed at us." And so if you really look, and there's a last little quote here. This is by Nick Rockefeller. "The end goal is to get everybody chipped, to control the whole society, to have the bankers and the elite people control the world." Interesting. He says the end goal is to get everybody chipped. Now, in China, they're not chipping their folks. If you understand the credit system that they have put in, the people in China are willingly and happily taking the government phones. They're putting cameras in their homes, and everywhere they go, there are cameras everywhere. And this whole Project Maven, Project Dragonfly of artificial intelligence and social management is being done without chips. So I don't know if we can really count on the fact that it's going to be chips or what it's going to be. But bottom line, they want to tag us all. And I'm not saying that. They are. So if you understand where we are and what we're doing, we shouldn't be so cavalier and so dismissive of what we're doing with our local government. We can't really, it's very, very hard to start cleaning up something of a grand scale like the Constitution for Spokane and for Washington with such a mess in our own backyard. So what I suggest and what I am purporting is that those businesses that are here that care about liberty, you, the listener, that care about liberty, you need to start getting organized. I wouldn't count on the GOP party, especially after what they did to Cecily Wright, a very good, patriotic, liberty-minded person. When you've got people like the sheriff and everybody else that went out the day after she resigned, and oh, by the way, that event was scheduled before she even resigned. The more I am learning, the more I know that there are just people with machinations of avarice and the designs of no good. I'll just say they're just players of no good. I do understand when people have the opportunity to have dominion and power, they typically begin to practice unrighteous dominion. And that's what we see typically in all leadership. I would basically challenge every leader to say and prove to me that they are not practicing unrighteous dominion, period. As we start looking at what's going on, and as we start really, you know, looking for real leaders, because I'll tell you, the leaders we've got, they suck. And I, in some respects, I'm kind of happy I don't live in Spokane. But I believe Spokane can lead, and I believe the leaders are here. So that's why I'm telling you, Spokane, you need to start finding businesses and people willing to actually pull together. And you know what? reach in your pocket and actually start supporting a good conservative voice. Obviously, I'm not worthy of that. And in all honesty, I just don't have the time to go around asking, will you support this? Will you support this? I'm too busy trying to fight and save the Constitution. And that's why I'm doing my national show. And I'm just spending my efforts and time and money in doing that and in working in, obviously, other states such as Wyoming. If you listen to my national show on Red State Talk Radio, you'll be able to find out what's going on as far as what's going on in Wyoming, what's going on in the other states. We are already planting and nurturing seeds. We are moving forward, and we're moving forward in much better. I'm getting much better results than I thought. I was hoping that we would have actually been able to get some good planting here. But you are too divided here, Spokane. You're divided, and primarily your division is on religious interests. If you can't put aside your differences and your self-interest and actually coalesce for those principles of liberty and sovereignty, then you're going to struggle, and you're going to continue to struggle, and you're going to watch your area turn bluer and bluer. That old adage, divided or united we stand, divided we fall. Well, you are divided and falling. And that's why it is going to require leadership. And it's unfortunate that I do not see leaders putting aside their self-interest and their differences and coming together and say, what do we need to do? And I'm going to tell you right now, it's this simple. If you're not focused on the Constitution, if you are not focused on compliance to the Constitution, both the U.S. and the state constitution, and you're allowing your those who are governing you to grind their own agenda, whether it's being maintaining the sheriff's force in Spokane Valley, whatever those stupid agendas are, because that's what they are, they're stupid. We have to maintain compliance to the Constitution. You've got your job to do. Do your job. Don't worry about critics. Don't worry about what the heck's going on other than your job and whether it is in compliance to the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution. This 1639 thing, that is a huge violation to the U.S. Constitution. And I've already given some good advice to some people that are going to be organizing and moving forward. There are plenty of mechanisms, but most people don't understand the Constitution. Right there in the Bill of Rights, I'll just give you this as we wind down my last minute of my penultimate, because this is my penultimate show, folks. It's the one before the last. Anyway, if you look at the First Amendment, the very last right you have is the right to petition your government for your grievances for redress. You have the right to have them address and redress your grievances. And so there you go. You have the ability to literally call out. And oh, by the way, you need to start looking at every law, because most every law violates the Constitution because it includes clauses that are ex post facto. I can't believe the state legislators and I can't believe leaders in this area have not been screaming about the Hearst decision and how it violates ex post facto laws. Even though it came from a court, it doesn't matter. The court can't violate the Constitution, just like your sovereigns or your legislators cannot violate the Constitution. And ex post facto laws are violations of the Constitution. With that, I will be back next week with my final parting ideas and suggestions. And God bless. I'll be back next week.